We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I'm sure every single Florida fan, when they saw a 3rd and 8 coming, they're like, well, we know how this ends, right? That I think they were statistically the worst 3rd and medium defense in the country, which is very difficult to do because there's only one worst team in the country.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal. Boys and girls, my name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me over there, as always, the one, the only, still incomparable, Dan Rubenstein, sir!
Yo.
Sir, how are you?
I'm good. I always get excited for people who are able to cover teams efficiently with great detail and to get into the, I was going to say muck because it ties in with our guest's name, David Waters. But there's a, I am still an optimistic person when it comes to Florida football, just because of what we know the ceiling for the Gators to be. So I get very excited for people to add additional context that we always, that we generally don't have time for any team, because we don't really live and breathe a single team other than, I guess, Notre Dame for you and Oregon for me. So the offseason is a great opportunity to fill in some blanks with a number of teams, and excited to do it with Florida today.
Absolutely. We did it with Ryan Abraham, our friend from USCFootball.com, on the previous episode. So if you want to find out more about the year one debrief with respect to Lincoln Riley, go and check the Tuesday episode. Had a great conversation with Ryan, and today we'll be talking with Dave about, gosh, Billy Napier. Billy Napier's in a really interesting spot. Anthony Richardson getting steam as the number one overall pick, but this past season was very inconsistent, showed promise, showed all kinds of explosivity, but inconsistent. Questions about his development, questions about how the recruiting game at Florida is developing moving forward, especially in light of the Jaden Rashada news, which, at least for a hot minute in time, captured the college football world and our imagination as for all things NIL. So a lot here to digest and unpack with David. We're thrilled to have him on the show. We'll talk about all things Florida here momentarily. Don't forget, if you like our show, if you want to continue on this offseason journey with us, don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you can, or follow whatever your podcasting app of choice allows you to do. We're also on every social media platform. You can watch episodes out on YouTube.com. Just search for The Solid Verbal. You'll find us out there. And if you're really a super fan and really appreciate the hard work that Dan and I are putting in on a weekly basis, Verballers.com, Verballers.com. That is our Patreon. You can sign up to be either a certified or premium Verballer and get access to some bonus features like extra episodes, our Discord server, and the like. Did I miss anything, Dan?
No, I think that's good. We've got a board meeting coming up. That'll be
we
fun.
We do, don't we?
We do have a board meeting for all of our winners of our in-season pick'em pool, the board of the Solid Verbal Board of Trustees. That's, we just do ridiculous things here at Solid Verbal. Yes, that pick'em pool was at verballers.com. So if you're interested for the 2023 season,
yeah.
Never too early.
More to come.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk some Gators.
Yes.
Let's talk some Gators. You can find our guest of honor on the Gators Breakdown podcast, on the Gators Breakdown YouTube channel. He's all over the place. He's on Twitter. David Waters, sir, welcome to the show for the first time. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, look, we've been doing this year one debrief, as we're calling it here, on some of the notable first-year head coaches. And Billy Napier in Florida is a really interesting one. I almost feel like we need to bucket this into two categories. The first of which is last season, what happened year one? Let's break that down. The second is what has happened since the end of last season and how that narrative has maybe shifted a little bit in light of the Jaden Rashada stuff.
What does it mean?
Yeah, it's very complicated. That's why we brought you on. We want to get your insight on all of this. But why don't we start at the very top? Year one, Billy Napier in Gainesville, scale A through F like a report card. How do you grade out the job that Napier did?
Oh, man, you can't go higher than a C probably there. Just based on, I mean, look, he was handed a mess from the Dan Mullen situation. But hey, look, Florida fan base doesn't really care about excuses sometimes. And then when you go and see, you know, first year head coaches all throughout the country go and have a lot of success at the same time, then, you know, based on and coming off of bad years previously, no matter what the previous head coach left them. But a lot of fans know this was a mess and you're in the SEC. It's not as easy to bounce back maybe as it is in some form or fashion. But really, when you go and look at the first year, it was not being able to handle any kind of consistency. You get that big win versus Utah week one and all the eyes are on you and Anthony Richardson's on Heisman list. And the very next week, Florida looked like they were playing their first game of the season against Kentucky. They couldn't figure out Kentucky's defense. Anthony Richardson goes from a high A grade to Utah to not being able to, he didn't know where his throws were going versus Kentucky. And, the team couldn't handle success, didn't handle that with any kind of consistency. They kind of waddled through the rest of the year. And after the Georgia game, okay, you were setting up a November where Florida had everything in front of them. Okay, whatever happened in September and October, that's behind you now. You have some winnable games coming up. And they did that. They went to Texas A&M and got a big win over Jimbo Fisher and a struggling A&M Aggies team that they had to get that win. And then host South Carolina and beat the brakes off of South Carolina.
Yeah.
And then the very next week, go to Vanderbilt and just lose. It got kind of so the team couldn't handle consistency. They couldn't handle success very well. And South Carolina goes on to beat Tennessee and beats Clemson. Florida should have been that team. Florida should have had that momentum after beating South Carolina to go beat Vanderbilt and maybe go upset an FSU team in Tallahassee. But no, they couldn't handle expectations there. Part of it was Anthony Richardson. The team kind of followed him. The inconsistency we talk about with the team, it followed because of Anthony Richardson. Now, Florida had a better defense. The record's better anyway. But it kind of just seemed to ebb and flow with the quarterback play of Anthony Richardson.
Well, what's really interesting, I'm glad you brought that up because we tend to look at efficiency numbers all the time on this show. And in terms of the numbers, that kind of bears itself out. Florida is one of the more fascinating teams on paper because not very efficient, but extremely explosive. From week to week, they generally either vastly overperformed or vastly underperformed, whatever their projection was going into that game. Outside of Anthony Richardson, to what do we attribute that just week to week whipsaw?
The defense. Yeah. You knew pretty much what you were getting, but just an average defense gets Florida to 8 wins, maybe 9 wins. Just one more stop versus Tennessee, they maybe win that game. One more stop versus LSU, they maybe win that game. One more stop versus FSU, they maybe win that game. The defense just couldn't even be average at times. As I said, that two-game stretch versus Texas A&M and South Carolina, they played 6 quarters of shutout football that just came out of nowhere. You're just like, okay, maybe this defense is turning a corner. And then they go to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt has one of their best offensive games of the season. And then FSU, you know, they get into the backfield versus Jordan Travis, and he miraculously somehow twice just escapes and scores two touchdowns or leads to two touchdowns for FSU. And it was when you thought the team was turning a corner, just when you thought the defense was turning a corner, they just couldn't seem to put it together. So Anthony Richardson, for the most part, he played well enough, you know, for Florida to win those games. It's just they didn't have a defense to rely on whatsoever. I know the efficiency and the up and down of the quarterback play really comes into it as well. But if Florida just has an average defense, they're looking at an 8-9 win season.
So obviously, with anything complicated, there's going to be a number of factors as to why. So, you know, is it a coordinator thing? Is it a game planning thing? Is it an effort thing? Is it an injury thing? Was there any through line with, look, you look at Florida, and I'm sure every single Florida fan, when they saw a 3rd and 8 coming, they're like, well, we know how this ends, right? That I think they were statistically the worst 3rd and medium defense in the country, which is very difficult to do because there's only one worst team in the country. What happened? What was it that now you look back and you're like, what is fixable? Obviously, they hire a new defensive coordinator in Austin Armstrong. And so hopefully there's sort of new life and energy and scheme game planning stuff coming there. But what was it as you looked at, like, here's the through line as to why this defense couldn't figure it out?
So we thought it was as easy as Todd Grantham. Okay, Todd Grantham's gone. I can go step in on that sideline and get better production out of this defense. But no, that wasn't the case. You know, they were just as bad in many of the metrics. The only thing they really got better in was creating turnovers. And that saved them a whole lot. They saved them in the Utah game at the very end of the game, of course. But they were able to create turnovers more so than they were under Todd Grantham. So that saved them a bit during the season. But all in all, it was mostly the same defense. The third down struggles, as you said, stayed the same. It was 3rd and Grantham became 3rd and Tony.
Right.
Now he's gone, and we'll see what Austin Armstrong could come in and do. But it really was, there's no depth up front. You know, for as bad as in the SEC, you got to be strong up front in the trenches. They had Jervon Dexter pretty much playing out of position. He was playing 60 snaps a game. You don't need to play that many snaps up front in the SEC, but they had to. They had nobody behind him, no depth behind him. He's out there playing more snaps than he really should be. Linebacker, Amari Burney probably had his best season as a Gator at the linebacker spot. Ventre Miller was injured, and then he was suspended for the first half of the FSU game. But behind them, you had to rely on a young Shamar James as a true freshman. Everybody else at the linebacker position kind of playing out of position. And then the secondary, besides Jason Marshall at corner spot number one, not a lot to rely on there. You had some young guys that were stepping up throughout the season, but they get hurt. Jaden Hill comes back and just an okay second cornerback. But safety position, Rashad Torrance, Trey Dean, just didn't get any better than they were from Todd Grantham to Patrick Toney. Florida just wasn't very strong up the middle. Defensive tackle, linebacker, safety play left a lot to be desired. And, you know, the safety was the last line of defense. And throughout the years, trouble tackling, horrible angles to go get those tackles. So to me, it was Todd Grantham, probably the game passed him by a bit. And then not being able to recruit at a certain level and recruit too many guys playing out of position. I think it was too tough for Patrick Toney to really come through year one and fix it. I do think probably no matter who the defensive coordinator is coming up this year, it probably would have been better in regards to the transfer portal and the guys they developed last year. But at the same time, I think Gator fans would, this whole reputation of Austin Armstrong being a little more aggressive, I think Gator fans would like to see that, you know, just to let the guys go use their speed, use their athleticism to fly around a little bit.
How much of 2022 is and is not on Billy Napier?
I wrestled with that question myself, too. I came into last year with expectations a little higher, but it was mostly because of Anthony Richardson making up for it. I didn't think the defense would be great by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought Anthony Richardson would make up for it, and he didn't enough. At times. So I think in the totality, year ones can be weird. And I think we can put too much on year ones at times. But there were times when he could have. Florida was a terrible team in the middle eight. The last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half, Florida was terrible.
Yeah.
They couldn't go into the halftime with any momentum and for whatever reason could not get stops or scores coming out of halftime either. So I think Billy Napier's got to figure out something there. But his in-game management at times, I thought versus Tennessee, I know he kind of got chastised a bit. I thought it was good. He went for fourth downs because he knew he had to keep up with the Tennessee offense.
Yep.
That was going to put up some points on the board. But throughout the seasons, maybe too aggressive and with the inconsistent quarterback play of maybe going for too many fourth downs, running for it on third down because he planned to go for it on fourth down, but that fourth down would be a little bit longer than it really should have been because of the inconsistency in the run game sometimes as well. So I think in-game decision-making's got to get a bit better there. And there's a lot of talk of, should he be a head coach / OC? Should he go hire an offensive coordinator right. So he can be the, the CEO type? And look, he wants to call his plays. That was a question I asked him at his opening press conference. Who's going to call the plays? And it was immediate. I'm going to call the play. I'm going to be the quarterback coach. But that's the way he wants to do things. I'm not saying it's wrong. And he'll probably change that before he eventually ever, if he gets fired at Florida or there's a decision if he's going to get fired or not, he'll probably make one change to hire an offensive coordinator. I don't know if that's going to make a difference for Billy Napier or not, but at least initially he's going to do it his way. He wants to call the plays. He wants to be the head coach, offensive coordinator at the same time. So I think, we'll see down the road how that affects, but I do think in some ways there was a lot on his plate in 2022 because of all the hats that he wants to wear.
So we're now in the midst of his first full offseason as the Florida coach. How is he seen off the field? Obviously, there are always going to be a number of transfers after year one of a new coach. A lot of players are going to give that new coach a shot and think, okay, maybe this is going to be a better fit for me. Maybe I'm going to see more playing time than the last guy. And of course, there's always just going to be a bunch of transfers when guys don't get that playing time or guys don't feel like they're a fit for the scheme or whatever. They don't feel like they're a fit for that staff. And so there has been a lot made of all of the guys who have left Florida, especially on the offensive line. A couple guys head over to USC. The recruiting class seems to come together nicely, even if it's not at the level of the best of Florida recruiting classes these past, 10, 15, 20 years. How do you evaluate the, early to December? Let's go post bowl game disaster against Oregon State, a very thin Gator team in the Vegas Bowl. Post Vegas Bowl until this very moment, bringing in a number of guys, obviously starting off the 2024 cycle very, very strongly. How do you evaluate the offseason thus far for Napier and his staff?
Yeah, all the magic words of culture that you hear about Billy Napier, all that's A+. The culture, you can't ask for anything better there. The attitude of the players, I've gotten to speak a lot with them through the Gator Collective and the NIL, and we get to speak to the players and very impressive young guys coming through the program right now. But then you go through the transfer portal, like you said. Look, it was either going to happen one of two ways. You can either go the LSU route and get rid of everybody before year one even comes along, or you can get rid of them after year one. And as you said, some guys right. stick around. Either way, it was going to happen, whether it be before the first season or after the first season. The mass exodus was going to happen at some point. So it happens after the first season. And of course, it's going to turn some heads. Of course, Florida goes 6-7, and now guys want to leave. Most of the time, though, it was guys who weren't really going to contribute a whole lot, except, as right. you mentioned, offensive line. Michael Torfman, he would have started along the offensive line. Ethan White would have started at left guard for the Gators. Those guys go on to USC and see if they can contribute there. And Florida went and hit the transfer portal pretty hard with Micah Mazuka from Baylor, who will start right away at the left guard spot. And then Keontae Goodwin from Kentucky as well. Damian George from Alabama going to go battle out on the left side. So they did some nice replacement there along the offensive yep. line. But in the end, it did seem like a bunch of just Dan Mullen players. And we've seen some players say that too of, hey, maybe this was a little bit too hard for them. The demands Billy Napier puts on you on the field and off the field may be a bit too much for that. And that's not fair to some of those players either. Some of them just weren't fits. Some yep. guys just don't get along with the new staff. They don't get the playing time, as you said. They do put in the work, but the playing time's not there. They go get a fresh start somewhere else. So it is a mixed bag of why guys want to leave the program, why they want to leave Florida. And I don't think it's anything noteworthy of negativity going on. Some guys just aren't fits for the staff, and some guys and the staff's just not fit for the players. So I don't think there was much there as far as negativity goes of just a sinking ship and guys want to jump off of it. Now, as you said, the biggest headline would be the Jaden Rashada saga.
Right.
And just how messy that got. And it's Florida firmly has a top 10 class with him. It falls out of the top 10 class without him. But it forced Florida was going to go get a transfer quarterback anyway. And they brought in Graham Mertz from Wisconsin, and a lot of polarizing quarterback in the transfer portal. That's right there. Is it too much of, okay, did the Wisconsin offense hold him back, or did he hold the Wisconsin offense back? You know, and hey, look, two things can be true at the same time. Yep. We'll find out probably in Gainesville the answer for that one. But now he is your guy. It was kind of a luxury. All right, you're bringing him in, and if he doesn't work out, then maybe halfway through the season you turn the keys over to a Jaden Machado. Well, now you don't have that luxury. You're riding or dying with Graham Mertz in this coming up season. And there were a ton of quarterbacks out there in the transfer portal, and Florida decides to get Graham Mertz. Now, you know, a little bit inside there, you know, they were really close with Michael Pratt from Tulane. That was looking like it was going to happen behind the scenes. He decides to stay at Tulane. So I think Florida scrambled just a bit there. But Graham Mertz is the guy. And, you know, Billy Napier's second year, you know, everybody's going to look for, hey, quarterback play and an improved defense. That's the only two things they're really looking for Billy Napier, and in a record improvement. And just kind of, did you make the right decisions? And then kind of to wrap it up, yeah, the recruiting class for this past, minus Jaden Rashada, outside the top 10. That's the first place a lot of people are going to look. Where did you rank in the rankings? But they did a lot of good in that recruiting class. They brought in three good receivers who probably should contribute all as true freshmen. Andy Jean is turning heads in spring practice really early as one of the best route runners that you get from a high school level, and he's making plays already in spring practice. We'll see how that translates. And they hit the transfer portal pretty hard as well. Offensive line, defensive line, in the trenches where they need it the most. They identified those spots. So all in all, as far as the offseason goes, it is kind of just wait and see mode. I think Gator fans were, after Utah, were ready to full bore jump on the Billy Napier wagon, and it all just kind of inconsistency falls apart. The recruiting class didn't really bring them back. A hard 2023 schedule hasn't really brought them back. It's kind of just wait and see mode with a hard schedule, what Florida really does.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's go back to Jaden Rashada. I know you want to talk more Jaden Rashada. I can't imagine you're not thinking to yourself, I'm so sick of talking about Jaden Rashada, but we're going to do it here because, as I mentioned at the very top, you kind of have to bucket a conversation like this into two camps, right? There is what happened last season, and then there is this big offseason story that, for many folks, I think outside the Florida bubble, they look at the Jaden Rashada thing in a similar way that many folks looked at the Florida State situation with Travis Hunter. Big recruit, it's working, suddenly it's not. Oh my gosh, now the bottom is falling out on this thing. The bottom sort of did fall out on this NIL agreement. Maybe you can speak a little bit more to the particulars about it, but the rumor was what, $13 million offered in some way, shape, or form to Jaden Rashada, the blue chip quarterback recruit from California. Originally was going to go to Miami and then was going to go to Florida, and then it suddenly went boom. Now he's going to be playing at Arizona State, probably getting some time out there before long. What was your view as for how that all went down, how, if at all, it has affected the program, maybe how the outside is viewing Florida football versus the realities on the ground.
And the Gator Collective.
And the Gator Collective, right? I mean, there's just so much to discuss here. Where do you go first when you think of the Jaden Rashada story and either what folks like Dan and I got right versus what we get wrong?
Yeah, so admittedly, you know, I'm pretty close with a lot of the people in the Gator Collective. So I'll put that out there, you know, as a disclaimer if people want to, you know, connect dots or whatever. But, you know, I tried to follow as much as I could from every single angle of it, you know. First of all, just being a fan of Florida, but, you know, just trying to figure out what happened, where it went wrong. And the way it was presented to me in talking to different avenues of how it goes is, okay, yep, he flips from Florida to Miami. Okay. And then, yeah, there is an NIL agreement. And the $13 million was brought up. And then all of a sudden, when it's ready to come about with the first payment, it's, hey, I never... Wherever the money's coming from, hey, I never agreed to that. What do you mean you never agreed to that? the $13 million, no, that's not happening, by the way. You know, the $13 million is not happening. Okay, so now it's left to scramble. You know, how can we still make this happen? So the big thing was with that scramble, he still signs with Florida on early signing day.
Right.
And this story is already, you know, behind the scenes out there. You know, hey, the money's not going to be there. The $13 million, it's not going to be there, but he's going to sign with Florida anyway. So, of course, you know, there's the collective, the NIL side of it involved. There's a lawyer involved. There's agents involved on the Rashada thing. And, you know, just the booster who, you know, supposedly promised the $13 million is now withdrawn that. Okay, so now what can we do? What can we do to make this happen where you still end up at Florida and they could just never come to the agreement? And, you know, who's going to be responsible? I mean, we're in March now. Yeah, you know, that's back in late December, early January. And he ends up going somewhere else. You know, I think if it's pretty much over with, if we were going to hear anything about fallout of this, as far as, I mean, there's legally nothing can really happen. I mean, it's is a player going to admit that they took some money? I mean, the money never happened. So that's why he's not at Florida. So that's the biggest thing there. No money ever switched hands, because that's why he's not at Florida right now. But somewhere along the way, there was a disconnect of, hey, this money is going to be there. Now it's not there. Right. And you know, the NIL, the Gator Collective, they drafted the contract. The money's not coming from them. It was shared to them. Hey, you'll draft the contract. You have the template. Put this in there. Okay, we'll put it in there. Because where it was coming from, they had, who they were dealing with had pretty much dealt with almost every NIL deal up to that point. There was no reason not to trust it.
Right. Why did it fall through? Why did the money just dry up all of a sudden?
That's the part I can't get. Yeah. All I know was, hey, this is the money we're telling you to put in there. I don't know if it was buyer's remorse. I don't know if, you know, Florida got a commitment from DJ Lagway at the same time, the high profile five-star quarterback for the 24 class. Is it, hey, we got this guy lined up next. You know, now we quote unquote don't need Rashada for that much money anyway.
Right.
That's me guessing there. I don't know if that played into it or not. But as far as, look, the $13 million at first was unbelievable. Nobody was going to believe it. But asking around, digging around more, all the articles coming out from every other source out there, that money, somehow that number was real.
Yeah.
No matter how asinine it is, no matter if you want to believe it or not, somehow that number was real.
It's a big number. That's a really big number.
It's an astronomical number. You know, in some ways, I'm glad it didn't work out, because not only for Florida, but how would that affect college football recruiting down the road?
Right. Hey, that's a market. Yeah.
Yeah, this Florida quarterback got $13 million. Okay, now I want it. Yeah. You know, so you know, don't you know, forget about Florida on that angle. It was going to affect college football in some ways, but you know, probably part of that, the fallout from it, from what I can gather, hasn't really hurt Florida. You know, Florida's recruiting ranking for the 2024 class, I don't think it's going to be affected by this all that much in the end. I think as we get through and all these visits start happening with other recruits and all that, do we get some message out there of maybe opposing coaches using this against Florida?
Well, that was actually going to be my question, not to interrupt you, but so the money dries up. This was a high profile kid. He's now going elsewhere. Is there any kind of longer term effect with respect to the Gator Collective, i.e. we can't take their word for it anymore. If I'm a recruit, do I really want to go there? Now, to your point, doesn't seem like that's really affected that many folks, if anybody. But it is a question that I'd imagine is kind of hanging out there, and certainly one in a competitive landscape like the SEC, you have to imagine other schools will try and use that against them.
Yeah, I think so. You know, spring visits will be starting to happen some more and more. Yeah. Summer visits will start happening more and more. Is that the message we start getting? As of now, you know, when they've had about 4 or 5 visit weekends so far since the new year, haven't heard too much about NIL affecting Florida. The Gator Collective still going on. It's still doing deals. It's still offering, you know, the NIL deals to current student athletes out there. So it hasn't really slowed down in that regard. But I mean, there are some changes coming there behind. Look, this opened eyes, at least for Florida, in behind the scenes a bit of how serious to take NIL and how much it's going to affect your recruiting class and how much it's going to affect the eyeballs on your program a bit. If anything, it could help in some regards to help get this cleaned up, get everybody on the same page, so everybody's on the same page moving forward and make sure something like this doesn't happen again. But I'm sure every other college program out there, they saw this happening. Hey, how do we make sure this doesn't happen to us? So all in all, it may be a good thing overall for college football and for Florida in the end. We will have to see how it affects Florida in the immediate future of, you know, how can they build their 24, 25 classes coming up, and maybe Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, Mike Norvell using this, and hey, sure, those deals there may not be so good.
Well, the immediate fallout is probably Graham Mertz. Graham Mertz could be the starting quarterback first game come this September. How do you feel about that? Like, have you started trying to talk yourself into it? What is the Gator community saying about Graham Mertz as the potential starting quarterback? Because I got to say, I mean, there was nobody higher on Graham Mertz than I was. And people who listen to our show know I have talked ad nauseum about the 5-touchdown game he had against Illinois. And that just never really had much fruit beyond that, right? It kind of stopped there, and maybe it was a product of the offense. Maybe it was a product of his development, but I find it really hard to get excited if I'm a Florida fan about Graham Mertz being the dude going into 2023.
Yeah, I agree. Wait and see is probably used too much for Gator Nation right now, but that is what it is. I think there's a little bit of excitement. You know, we've done our Graham Mertz deep dive ins and other podcasts and other avenues of media have as well. And look, it is truthful. The Wisconsin offense did him no favors. It's run on first down, run on second down. Hey, go complete 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8.
Right.
And barely do it off of play action, which he excelled in. But for whatever reason, a run heavy offense didn't use play action. So, you know, and now he was under center at Wisconsin a lot. He'll be in shotgun a whole lot more at Florida. They'll open up the offense a bit more compared to what Wisconsin did. But at the same time, you know, did Wisconsin not open up the offense because of Graham Mertz? I think that's a
chicken
fair
or
question.
Egg, right?
Yeah. Right. I think that is a fair question that we have to ask ourselves. And, you know, I hate to take the easy way out, but there will be differences of the offense at Florida. Will that make a difference for Graham Mertz? So early on through spring camp right now, we are here, and he's pretty much the number one quarterback already ahead of Jack Miller. Really no surprise. I'm not a huge Jack Miller fan to begin with. And that was even before the Oregon State bowl game disaster last year.
Yeah.
But he's going to be the guy. The offense is going to ride or die with Graham Mertz, you know, him being healthy. For Gator fans, they do hope that it was the Wisconsin offense that held him back, that he can live up to that recruiting potential that he had and use his arm to advantage. And hey, look, credit to Wisconsin. I mean, they recruited him, and it was, you know, he played in a more open offense in high school, and he goes, okay, well, you know, Paul Chris develops, you know, quarterback's pretty good. He's got a track record there. But that offense didn't do him any favors. But at the same time, we don't know if it was a limitation of him.
Yeah.
You talked about the offensive line filling in some gaps nicely after a couple of transfers. Obviously, Graham Mertz comes in and is going to be the presumed starter like you're talking about. Defense, though, if you're saying it's defense and quarterback, that's everything beyond that is whatever. If you can figure out defense to whatever extent, if you can figure out quarterback to whatever extent, Florida, even with this schedule, I think they're outside of Gainesville for like a month of October, something like that. What are the reasons for defensive optimism to ascend to below average, to average, right? Is it a new pieces thing? Is it a new coordinator thing? Is it a misuse thing like you mentioned up front at times? Is the depth going to be better? What are the names people should know for why you know, striving for average might be realistic this year.
Yeah, and kind of connecting the dot like you just did too. You know, when I was looking at Florida going into transfer portal quarterback bingo lottery or whatever it was, hey, let's get a quarterback that can maybe make up for a bad defense. Now, I'm not sure Graham Mertz can do that.
Right.
So that was kind of the worry there. But, you know, with this defense, and we did, of course, a big spring preview of, and I got going, I got thinking, I was like, hey, this defense, especially up front, might be a bit deeper. And yes, they lose Jervon Dexter, but go and get Noah Banks from Louisville. Go and get Cam Jackson from Memphis, who I think, right, he very underrated transfer, just because he's coming from Memphis, I think he'll slide right in SEC play and be a versatile piece for Florida up front. Desmond Watson coming along, a big plug up the middle there for Florida. Chris McClellan, who was a true freshman last year, gets a lot of playing time. So I do think through development, through recruiting, Florida could be deeper up front. And the linebacker spot to go get to Roger Mitchell from Ohio State, do Spurlock from Michigan, to add to all SEC freshmen, Shamar James, who I think, you know, who and now should be deeper at the linebacker spot. Now, lose the experience of Ventrell Miller, lose the experience of Amari Bernie. So they're relying on some new faces at linebacker. But through the transfer portal has shown us that, you know, it can be a quick fix. And Florida's going to have to rely on quick fixes along the defensive front and at the linebacker spot. And I do think they'll hit the transfer portal again for the secondary. As I mentioned, the struggles at safety for Florida last year with Trey Dean and Rashad Torrance, Miguel Mitchell, Kamari Wilson, or two new safeties who are going to be in the rotation there for Florida. You can rely on Jason Marshall as cornerback one, but there's going to be a nice little battle for that cornerback two spot between Devin Moore and Jaden Hill. One of the most intriguing battles for me, but Jaden Hill maybe even playing star for the Gators. Right. He told us last week, but Austin Armstrong coming in as a new defensive coordinator, and one big change, it was going to happen regardless whether they were getting a new defensive coordinator or not, but Corey Raymond taking over the complete secondary. He's going to be the voice for the safeties. He's going to be the voice for the cornerbacks. They'll have one voice now instead of Patrick Toney at safety and Corey Raymond at cornerback. So I do think those changes are very needed for Florida. Can they pay dividends? I do think this defense will be better just because they'll be deeper. But how much do you have to make up for a Graham Mertz at quarterback? You know, so we came into last year saying it's hard to be as bad as they were, but now we've been saying that for going on 3 years now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the revolving door of, we used to say that about the Florida offense. Well, it can't be worse than last year, and it was. Well, it can't be worse than last year, and it was. Now we're saying that about the Florida defense. And ever since the 80s, Florida had always had a defense you could at least rely on. Besides 2007, that after the 2006 national championship team, Florida had a defense you could always rely on. Last 3 years, ever since 2020, the COVID year, that did them in. They haven't been able to recover from that. Third defensive coordinator in 3 years now. That has to pay off for Florida and Billy Napier.
What's the state of recruiting for Florida right now, both in-state and nationally? Obviously, Florida's rivals in Tennessee and Georgia are ascending, recruiting super well. In-state, Miami can recruit very well, both because of Mario Cristobal's ability, and they can sell. Look, this is a full rebuild. We need your help. And they're recruiting along the East Coast, obviously, in state. Florida State's having the success on the field, though Mike Norvell isn't, you know, stringing together top three classes nationally. Obviously, Florida's 2024 class is off to a great start, as you mentioned, with DJ Lagway from Texas, the five-star quarterback. What do you expect from recruiting moving forward? Is this a staff? Is this a program that is built to compete with Georgia and Alabama in the way that we're used to seeing way back when? Or should we get used to more top 8 to top 12 classes? What is the current moment for Florida recruiting?
Yeah, they have the nice base there with DJ Lagway, as you said, Miles Graham, Adarius Hayes, two linebackers there. Chauncey Bowen's a running back who's really coming on lately, and Georgia's heavily interested in Chauncey Bowen's a running back there. I look for him to shoot up the rankings a bit more as we go through this. But look, it's in-state recruiting, and it's not just for Florida. For Miami and Florida State as well, yep, they've got to stop Georgia from coming in and getting all the guys. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State right now, still with Brian Hartline, as you know, as integrated as he is in that offense, is still coming into Florida, still coming into South Florida, and getting whatever wide receiver he wants.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. What Florida did at wide receiver last class, I love with Aiden Mazzell, Andy Jean, and Eugene Wilson. Very good wide receivers there for Florida. but you're still missing those elite, you know, those top five state of Florida guys. And there's a number one wide receiver in the country, but they're going to Ohio State, you know, so, or Alabama or Georgia. And that's just been a trend. Who's going to be the first one to stop that? It hasn't been Miami yet. Has it been Florida yet? Has it been Florida State yet? Which in-state school is going to be able to stop that bleeding from in-state, I think, is still the biggest question. The big three in the state of Florida are not taking advantage of in-state talent just yet. So, look, Billy Napier has built this staff. They got the army that they call it. The number of staff members is up there with Alabama, is up there with Georgia, but still lagging behind in recruiting. Is it going to take on-field results to sell? I'm a believer. If you're a recruiter, you can recruit. It's just kind of how it goes in there. So they've got to figure this out. NIL was a bigger factor than what I think they thought it would be last cycle. And I mentioned everybody getting on the same page and taking NIL a bit more serious. Meetings have happened. That needs to be the focus so they don't fall far behind again. So I do think, you know, with the focus being on NIL. But the problem is the 24 class in-state is not as good as it was in 23. I think the 23 class was the class Billy Napier really needed to hit on in-state. Wasn't able to do so. They went out of state for a big-time quarterback. All right, they're DJ Lagway, the staple. You don't blame Florida for trying to stay in-state for a quarterback there. You go get a big-time quarterback whenever you can get him. But in the end, we know it comes down to which big three school can recruit the state of Florida better? And that'd be the first one, I think, that breaks through the mold to go compete with Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson.
So, Dave, let's wrap with this. You gave Billy Napier a C, kind of a mixed bag last season, right? Finished the year, 6-7, lost the bowl game, as we discussed a little earlier. But on the same note, I am definitely detecting notes of positivity with respect to the quote-unquote mess that was left Billy Napier after the Dan Mullen era. We haven't talked a whole lot about that, but maybe we can close on that note. What were the depths of that mess? How bad was it? A lot of us here who follow college football more on the national level don't have the kind of insight to go into a particular program and understand the machinations that make something work or not work. But what was the state of the program when Napier took it over? And at least for things off the field, how would you grade the job that he's done getting the house back in order?
I think we go back to 2020. Florida comes off of a very successful 18-19 campaign under Dan Mullen, double-digit win seasons, winning New Year's Bowl games, beating Michigan in the Peach Bowl in 18 and beating Virginia in the Orange Bowl. Everything was setting up for 2020 to be a huge year for Florida, and then COVID happens. And I don't think Dan Mullen could get out of his own way when COVID happened. I think he had NFL interest at that point. And then a delay of a season, and you had player, you had civil rights coming along and player marches, and Florida's getting ready for a scrimmage. And then all of a sudden his players are out there marching, and he didn't know how to get them back in the house. And you know, there was just a lot going on in 2020 that I don't think he ever really recovered from. Recruiting had always been a sore spot. Even though Florida was winning double-digit games, recruiting still wasn't going as good as I think it should have been in that situation. A lot of it was approach. I had talked to staff members behind the scenes, and they couldn't agree on offers, or they would offer somebody and Mullen would rescind the offer, and it just couldn't be on the same page in recruiting. That's ultimately where it went. And then 2020 happens, early loss to Texas A&M. Mullen has some crazy post-game comments that kind of does him in of, full stadiums and all that. And all that. And then the end of the 2020 season, he never bounced back from. Yeah, inexcusable loss to LSU the week before the SEC championship game. You give Bama all they could handle, then you just don't completely care, even admitting you don't even care about the Cotton Bowl versus Oklahoma. I mean, there's fans I know who paid a lot of money to go see Florida play in that bowl game. You're telling them, hey, we don't care. This game means nothing to us.
Yeah.
And I just don't think he ever could check back in. If it was a big game to get ready for, Alabama comes to the Swamp in 21 and, Florida loses by single digits there, a chance to tie that game late with a 2-point conversion. But he just was never fully able to check back in from the 2020 season, his NFL interest. Recruiting, like I said, have fallen. A lot of guys in, out of position. Wide receiver recruiting had taken a step back as well. He couldn't develop his own quarterbacks. Emory Jones was a highly recruited quarterback. Couldn't develop, didn't hit on him. Wouldn't play Anthony Richardson in 2021. What more development could have Anthony Richardson could have had under Dan Mullen to maybe even be better in 21 and maybe save Mullen's 21 season and go develop him for 2022. So it was just a lot of missteps in recruiting early on and then on the field relationship-wise in 2020 that I think really did him in there that Billy Napier does have to dig himself out of a bit. And, you know, just the culture, a lot of players got away with a lot of stuff. As I said, when Mullen checked out, he checked out in a lot of avenues. And it was just...
It's kind of admirable, isn't it?
Yeah. It's getting paid all that money and not having to care as much. So, as I said, you know, when he wanted to turn it on, he's one of the best play callers out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunate because I thought he was the right hire in 2018. He was the hire I wanted to make for Florida. Looked like everything was heading in the right direction. But for whatever reason, 2020 comes along and just kind of derails it all.
Gator Dave, where can people find your stuff, man?
Yeah, they can follow me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Podcast is hosted at news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdownTV station I work for. Follow me on Twitter, David Waters, at GatorDave_SEC. All the podcast platforms out there, YouTube version as well. Just keeping it going. The moniker of Gators Breakdown, there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation. And it holds up. It holds up.
You're here. Dave, thank you so much for your time today, for your insight. Best of luck to you through this offseason. I'm sure it'll be very, very busy for you. And we'll have to catch up soon as the season draws near.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
There you go, Dan. Gator Dave chiming in on all things Florida, giving you the full Monty of all things Florida football. Anything you could possibly want to know, Dave did a great job of, I think, recapping that and giving us greater insight into what's going on in Gainesville. Again, we cover this from the national level. We try to be as plugged in as we can, but admittedly, more often than not, we are on the outside looking in. We are reading the same headlines as many folks out there who aren't Florida fans are, drawing our own conclusions from afar. So it's great to get someone with on-the-ground knowledge like Dave to set us straight.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of college football fans are dumb, and we pride ourselves in being the dumbest. So it is nice to find those smart people who can fill in the context. What is your opinion? Obviously, there is some guarded optimism that the talent level is rising in Gainesville from David. Obviously, guarded optimism that Graham Mertz is in a better situation potentially from a scheme standpoint. And look, we all know the benefits of a fresh start.
Sure.
And we've seen quarterbacks in the past find those fresh starts. Hell, I root for a team that I was super down on their quarterback transfer, and it took me by surprise. Now, the defenses he faced in the Pac-12 are not on the level of what Graham Mertz potentially could be facing with Kentucky and Georgia and Tennessee and LSU on the schedule. But as far as you can tell, because you're in the same, at least you're in the same time zone.
I am.
What is your feeling on Florida football under Billy Napier moving forward?
I like the hire a lot. When they hired Billy Napier, it's funny. I mean, it was such a turbocharged coaching carousel in which he ended up getting hired to Florida because we had Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly. And we didn't talk as much about Billy Napier. That hire got so much less attention than any Florida hire in my memory, just because it was kind of a no-brainer and it seemed like it made the most sense and they made the move very quickly. So by all accounts and based on what Davis said, he has done a great deal towards cleaning up the mess that Mullen made. And it was probably always unfair to expect any kind of meteoric rise in 2022. And look, as he said, Florida fans don't really have patience as one of their virtues. And I think that probably extends to most of the big teams in the SEC. They're not alone in that respect, but a 6-6 regular season is not going to be good enough moving forward. He knows that. I would expect that you will continue to see progress, slow progress on the Florida side of things, that you will see him kind of bridge that gap with what we saw last season, right? The inconsistency from week to week, I think that will start to normalize out a little bit and we won't hopefully see the peaks and valleys in the manner that we did last season. I am very skeptical, though, on Graham Mertz. I'm very, very skeptical on Graham Mertz. I have wanted, for as long as I have known the name Graham Mertz, for him to work out and be a superstar. We have not seen that yet. I'm skeptical that suddenly a change of scenery, a new scheme, better players around him is going to unlock that potential. But like David, I will remain optimistic that it can work. I don't think he's a horrible quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. No. And I don't think it's going to be an unmitigated disaster with him as the signal caller in Gainesville. I think it'll be okay. I just don't know if we're going to see those high heights that we expected initially. So, look, you take all that in context of a really, really difficult schedule in 23, as ever. In the SEC, they're on the road at Georgia. They're on the road at LSU.
They open at Utah Thursday night.
At Utah. They've even got to go to Kentucky, to South Carolina. These are all programs that in their own right are building towards something. So it won't be easy for Napier. But based on what Dave said, like, if the culture is there, if they've gotten buy-in from the players, it does seem as if they've done a few things to try and address depth concerns along the defensive front and in the linebacking core. So I remain optimistic that it will be better than it was last season. I don't know what a realistic expectation though looks like. You know, if I said to you 7-5 or 8-4, is that good enough for the Florida community? This is a program that's very, very used to having great success on the national stage and maybe haven't been there now where they've wanted to be for the last couple seasons. What is enough to signal progress? Is it 8 wins? Is it 9 wins? Is it just better consistency? That's an answer I don't really have.
I think in year three, so we're entering year two, I think in year three and beyond, you give Billy Napier 2 full recruiting cycles and portal cycles to fully populate this roster, because it's easier than ever, as we just talked about with our USC episode, easier than ever to improve your roster quickly. It helps when you're bringing in a Heisman caliber quarterback immediately rather than Graham Mertz, all due respect to the highs of Graham Mertz. That becomes a lot easier, and depending on the conference, in year three, Florida should, year three and beyond, Florida should be competing for New Year's Six style results, because it's just that kind of program with the type of talent nearby. And Georgia is going to be excellent for years upon years moving forward, as long as Kirby Smart is there. Now, it's a different year for Georgia right now, just because of the quarterback change, coordinator change. You know, there's going to be a lot of new faces on both sides of the ball for Georgia. Obviously, Tennessee making, you know, a move to Joe Milton at quarterback with Hendon Hooker exhausting his eligibility. South Carolina, you know, loses a couple key guys to the portal, but there's still some consistency there in Columbia. Kentucky making changes, new quarterback, new old coordinator. So there's a lot new happening in the SEC East. Now, Florida's on a losing streak to Vanderbilt at the moment, so they got to get over that specific
gotta fix
hump.
That. That's got to be fixed.
Got to fix that.
Yep.
But I think, again, Florida especially, or the Florida schools especially, given that even if a player ends up going elsewhere out of high school, you get homesick. There's so much talent there that you can fill out that roster, I believe, relatively quickly if you're Billy Napier. The Austin Armstrong thing is interesting. He's 29.
Yeah.
That's young, Ty. That's a few generations, not just below you, but a few generations below myself as well. Right. So he's at Alabama for a month, did good things at Southern Miss as their coordinator, and makes the move to Florida. He has experience with Billy Napier. So I think there is that muscle memory for Billy Napier. You mentioned liking the hire. I think there's a lot of reasons to still like the hire. He has the head coaching experience, and even more importantly, perhaps, he has major program experience.
Does.
You know, Arizona State, Alabama,
Yep. Of
course. So that to me is interesting. He has the muscle memory about operating and improving things at big places. And so Florida's a different level from where he's been as a head coach, but still, they keep the offensive line in a good place last year. They fill in those blanks. They run the hell out of the ball, at least from an explosivity standpoint, with Trevor Etienne and Montrell Johnson. It is that defense thing. And if there's a school, if there's a state that I believe you can quickly improve a defense,
it's Florida. Yeah,
it's probably Florida, with the amount of speed you can recruit on defense. So I'm cautiously optimistic. And look, we've both been in the situation where we say to ourselves, if they can just improve to average to below average, there's something there on defense. So, yeah, it's a tough schedule. I am willing to they have to make a bowl game, of course. And sure. I think eight games in a still rebuilding time should be big picture considered a success. The Jaden Rashada thing isn't, you'd like to get, if you're a program like Florida, you got to get in a blue chip-ish quarterback every cycle now. That's just the norm with how active the portal is. And so that's disappointing that Florida wasn't able to secure that guy out of high school this season. So I'm still optimistic. There's nothing that I feel, you know, crazy down on about Florida at the moment, because the change needed to happen on defense. They needed to hit the portal hard. They needed to secure good line classes in this past class, line groups, and they did. So they're in a good spot, but they need that Zazz at quarterback.
And gotta have the Zazz. Need the Zazz.
And so if Graham Mertz is just okay this year, then it's full savior to not just hold on to, but to play DJ Lagway early. That's tough, man.
You'd like there
to be a better stopgap situation. And, you know, if I'm a Florida fan, I'm impatient because I'm spoiled. I know what the best of Dan Mullen looks like. I know what the best of Urban Meyer looks like. You know, I know all of these things and we know their ceiling. So I'm impatient. And the stopgap situation, to me, I don't want to play DJ Lagway until late 24, early 25, ideally. And so since we're already having this conversation, it's not an amazing sign at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, I get the impatience. Yeah. It's the SEC and it's Florida.
Of course.
I get it. I mean, they're used to a certain degree of success. There is also a lot of merit in a slow rebuild.
That exists now, though.
Well, I don't know if it exists. And it probably exists a lot less now with the money that coaches are being paid in the era of the transfer portal and NIL and all of these new factors that we have to consider. But I do think back to the Brian Kelly era at Notre Dame. I'm very familiar with what that program looked like when he took it over. And it took a while to get that program up to speed, to get it feeling like the line is going to be consistent year in and year out. The defense is going to produce at a pretty high level year in and year out. There are obviously elements of that Notre Dame system that Kelly never quite solved, but it was a slow build in his time there. And so I think, to the point, it's probably a lot easier to build quicker at Florida, given the proximity to talent, and you don't have some of the same restrictions as you would at Notre Dame. I would expect that Napier can turn this thing around, can build this thing moving forward, but you got to start with the foundation. And if anything I took from that conversation we had with Dave, it seems like Napier's done some work on the foundation. And hopefully moving forward, it'll make the whole thing a lot more solid.
When were they in the SEC championship game against Alabama? I think it was the 2020 COVID year, right? The Kyle Trask season. They bombed Georgia, 4 or 5 years into Kirby's recruiting.
Yeah.
And so we know the potential's there. Maybe, well, it's a different coach then and different players then, but the potential's there and has been lately to compete with the best of the SEC. It's just, you mentioned Brian Kelly. They were in the national championship in what, year 3, year 4, Brian Kelly?
Yeah.
So a slow rebuild, and Notre Dame's a very specific place with no Georgia on their schedule. Usually
they did have
the home and home somewhat recently. I don't think there's an excuse if you are Florida as a program. And I know there's been facility chatter that they fell behind and they're doing more and more to catch up. There's no excuse for Florida with 3-4 years into a coach not to be playing in orange, peach, sugar, and now we're going to a playoff with 12 teams. Florida should be one of those 12 teams, or competing to be one of those 12 teams late in the season, much more often than not.
And college football is better. SEC is better football when Florida is playing at its peak, because
the best home field advantage in the country.
It is loud. Ben Hill Griffin Stadium is loud. It is loud. It is built below. It's like subterranean, and it just sort of bottles up the noise. It's an incredible game day atmosphere. And so we hope that, for Billy Napier's sake, for Florida fans' sake, that it continues to forge ahead in 2023. Let us know what you think. We're at solidverbal@gmail.com. You can, of course, find us all across social media. If you like what we do, if you want to support the show, if you want access to bonus features, our Discord server, things of that ilk, verballers.com, verballers.com. Sign up to be a certified or premium verballer, or just go and check it out. See what we have to offer. We'd love to have you stop on by and check out the perks that Dan and I are putting out into the world here throughout the long, cold months of the college football offseason.
Yeah.
That does it for this week of public episodes. We've got our Bruin A, which will be exclusively available to our folks over on Patreon. Again, you know the URL for that, verballers.com. That drops every Thursday morning. In the meantime, make sure you follow along via your podcasting app of choice, via the YouTubes and the social media and all of the other hotspots where you can find our content, Dan.
We've got some totally out there, and I mean that in a terrific way, the subscribers on our Patreon who ask the questions for our, when you say Bruin A, that's our weekly Q&A episode. We'll get one question. It'll be like, look, with Wisconsin making some changes on offense, do you expect them to be a more well-rounded team to compete at the top? Should they? And then the next question will be like, in retrospect, did you lose your virginity at the right age? And I was like, oh, my God. Same episode.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to be answering that specific question, but those are the types of questions that it's great. They're all mad in a terrific way. So that's it.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, thanks again for downloading and supporting the show. We'll talk to y'all soon. Have a good weekend. Stay solid.
Peace.